This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, HRRN Nation. It is time once again for Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna flying solo again tonight. Christina McManigal will be back in the saddle with me next week. Want to extend a special welcome to everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220, XM Channel 206, and all of you tuning in on our website, on your smartphone or your tablet, with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. As always, I like to start the program by reminding you that a portion of the sponsorship from this show is given back to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund to support those riders who are no longer able to do the things that they did for so much of their career. And they provided us with so many great memories, and they made so many sacrifices to get to the point that they could ride at a top level. And unfortunately, because of circumstances and injuries that have left them unable to perform now, they're not able to do that. So we like to support the PDJF. It is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network. You can do the same by visiting pdjf.org and make sure you support the PDJF fund as much as possible. This is, of course, St. Patrick's Day and a St. Patrick's Day edition of Jock Talk. And who better to visit with us for the next hour on this St. Paddy's Day than the native of Dublin, Ireland, and the man referred to by his fellow jockeys as Lucky Charm. It is James Graham here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. James, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, happy St. Paddy's Day.
Yeah, happy St. Paddy's Day. It's true. How do you
celebrate St. Paddy's Day, James?
Like everyone else does. With my family.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. It's actually a much more religious event in Ireland than the green beer drunk fest that we often see here in the States, right?
Yeah, definitely. St. Patrick, I guess he ridded the country of snakes. For sure, Ireland has always been too cold for snakes, but there's still plenty of them there.
Yeah, what do you remember about some of those early St. Paddy's days when you were growing up in Ireland?
Going to the pub.
That was always the first stop. So, hey, it wasn't much different than what it is here.
Yeah, exactly. Now, go to the parade and stuff at home when you were a kid. That was a big treat, you know. So that was that. You'd have 6 children and 2 parents, and they'd take you to the parade and let you have fun at the parade. If you could get close enough to see a couple of the floats going by, you were happy.
Yeah, typical Irish family, 6 children. I love that. Are you the only one that's involved with horse racing?
No, there's actually 7 of us, but he came 10 years after the second last, so he was oops. But he worked for Philip Hobbs in England.
Is that your only other sibling that's involved?
Yeah.
Okay. What do the other brothers and sisters feel about you guys being involved in horse racing?
Well, they're happy for us, I think. They're always online. We're always talking. They're always congratulating and doing stuff that family does when somebody's doing good, you know?
Well, you are doing very well. You're fast approaching the 2,000 win milestone, just 9 wins shy. You're sitting at 1991. I know you're well aware of that. Are you feeling any additional pressure yet?
No, it's never pressure. Going out to do a job that you love doing, it's not really a job, you know?
That's interesting. I've had so many trainers and so many jockeys tell me that they start to kind of, it starts to weigh on them a little bit when they get close to a milestone number, but you don't feel any of that?
No, I never have. When, like, for me, Milestones are great, but there's more important things than milestones, you know.
What about when you were closing in on 1,000 wins? What was that like?
Just like every other day, went to the races.
What do you remember about the day it finally happened? That had to be special, though.
I remember the trainer's wife telling me, "Oh, we've got the monkey now." And I said, "What do you mean?" She says, "Well, you're on the way." And I said, and she goes, "Well, normally people get in and out and start overthinking." And that was the race I won. It was actually for Rusty Arnold that I win my 1,000th race for at Keeneland.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that had to be special to win it at Keeneland, too.
Yeah. And it was on a horse called Mint Chip. So it's, you know, it was one of those things that happened, and it happened, and I just happy that it happened.
Yeah, I remember that horse, Mint Chip. I remember talking about that horse on some of the shows that we did leading up to it, and a really nice horse, and it had to be, a very special moment for you when you finally did, as you just said, get that monkey off your back.
Yeah, but it was, I think I went through that day, and I just, you know, I was just doing my thing, and it happened, and I was very happy with it, and I was all excited when it was done, went on to the next race, and went on about my business.
Jockey James Graham here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. James, let's take it back to the beginning. You grow up in Dublin, Ireland, and how did you first fall in love with horse racing? Where did this come from?
Just watching TV on a Saturday. We'd have the horse racing on the TV. My granddad used to try and tell me that my dad wanted to be a jockey when he was younger, and his mother wouldn't let him, and stuff like that, and it stuck with me, and I wasn't really very good in school, so for that, I was always looking for a way out, you know? But I was sent to my career guidance teacher because I was very, very unfocused in class. He asked me what I liked, and I told him that I liked horses, and we went from there. He gave me an application form for the apprentice school in Ireland, and I went to the apprentice school.
Wow. Had you spent much time around horses at that point?
And not really. There was always loose ponies around our area, so like if you were lucky enough, the guy who owned it one would let you ride one, and you'd be happy with that. And that's the way it was, you know. It's bareback and a bit of a bridle, and off you'd go down around the field or down the street or something like that, you know.
That's such an interesting and such a unique career choice for a young man like that. You're talking about, you know, being in high school, talking with a guidance counselor, and you knew right away that you wanted to be around horses. How about going to the racetrack? Had you been to the racetrack much before that?
Never.
Really?
I've never been to a race meeting. The only meetings we watched were the Grand National, Cheltenham, probably the Irish Derby, the English Derby, all the classics, you know, because they'd be the ones that'd be watched on TV, you know?
So how old were you when you finally went to Ireland's jockey school?
I was just turned 15.
Wow. What was that like, walking in there for the first time and getting a taste of it?
Intimidating.
Really?
Very intimidating, yeah. Because it was the first time I was away from home, you know, as kind of an adult. You don't, Mom didn't let us out of her sight that much, but when I went and did that, it was the first 2-week trial, and I said, I like this. I like being in the countryside, because I grew up in the city, you know, and there wasn't as much greenery where I grew up as there was where I had went to in the apprentice schools.
So how about that first time that they put you on the back of a horse?
I thought I could do this.
It felt natural?
I started from scratch. I'd never sat in a saddle before, you know?
Was it nerve-wracking?
No. I've never been nervous of horses. Never, ever. But, you know, learning, listening, doing what you're told, and it all works out.
So if I'm not mistaken, that the purpose of that two-week introductory session in the Ireland Jockey School is to determine if a person is actually jockey material.
Yes.
How did they know that you were jockey material? What did you show them that gave them that indication?
Well, I guess I was a hard worker. I wasn't afraid of horses. I did what I was told. I understood the fundamentals of being too heavy and not being able to be a jockey. So I guess that was a big plus, I think. But they brought me back. They brought me back for the 10-month course, and we went from there.
Was weight ever an issue for you?
Not really. When I went to the apprentice school, I probably weighed... When I went to the apprentice school on the two-week trial, I weighed 4 stone, 3 or 4 pounds. I wasn't very heavy at all.
So what's that in English?
14 pounds and a stone, so 14 fours.
Okay.
I can't do math. See? Another reason why I didn't like school.
Come on, I was counting on you to bail me out on that one.
I probably weighed about 60 pounds, maybe.
Oh, wow.
Maybe, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so you were pretty much born to be a jockey in that respect.
Yes.
So how about your parents? What did they think when you finally said, hey, I'm going to leave high school, I'm going to go to Ireland's jockey school? What did they think?
They were very skeptical. They, there was some, I don't think you should. I said, well, look, I'm not articulate enough to go to college, and not that I'm not articulate enough. I just didn't like being in class, and I was getting letters sent home to my parents. I was, you know, I was fighting school more than I was supposedly learning in school. So,
who was your instructor in the school?
Oh, we had different teachers, different classes, you know.
Okay, so it wasn't like you were learning from a retired Hall of Famer like Chris McCarron with his jock school here?
No, in the apprentice school, we had a guy who rode. We had Derek O'Sullivan was the head of the apprentice school. He has passed away since.
Okay.
But it was three or four guys that would, one would be for PE. They were actually like, there to just keep you in line and keep the funny business down to as much as we could, you know?
But
more like corrective adults than they were instructors, you know? We had, we actually started off in the Army Equitation School with show jumpers, and they taught us how to ride there. And as you went on, you got moved along and sent out to a racing yard then. And after, I think, 12 weeks of learning how to ride, you were sent to a yard that they thought you'd fit in.
Wow. Was there a jockey that you looked up to at that time?
Oh, it was Lester Pickett. He was brilliant. He was the best. Probably the best in Europe at the time. And then as I got into it, you start watching other riders, and by that time he'd started to retire, and you know, you'd start watching the paper and you'd start reading the race news, and Tony McCoy had been over in Ireland, and he went over to England, and he's a jump jockey, so not a lot of people, but there was Johnny Morta, there was Mick Cannon, all Christy Roach. You know, there was a lot of them, and they were really good riders, and Dermot Hogan, and it was just the guys that were you've seen on an everyday basis, just about, you know?
Yeah. Have you ever had the chance to meet Lester Pigott or any of the other jockeys you just mentioned?
No, well, I rode with Johnny Morta. I rode with Dermot Hogan. I rode with Mick Canaan. Rode with Christy Roach. And now these are all guys that were leading Ireland, because they were, right before I come over here, I had an apprenticeship at home and it wasn't working out, so, but they were still riding at the time. And I rode with Mick Canaan in the, I guess it was probably the Beverly D or one of them races up there in Arlington, you know?
Yeah. What was that like? That had to be a thrill.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Every race is great. Every race is great.
So you mentioned leaving the school and doing your apprenticeship. Where did you do the apprenticeship? And tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, I worked for a guy called Pat Martin. Well, first, when they left us out of the apprentice school, they sent us to a trainer. I was sent to Mr. John Oxton, which where I got to meet Johnny Morta and Christy Roach and Dermot Hogan, them guys there. But because I couldn't get out of bed, I was let go. I was relieved of duties in that yard.
Couldn't get out of bed?
No, I was... I was, as my mom said, you were a little immature. But I got fired after about... I was let go after about a year and a half, maybe 2 years. And just, you know, just because I couldn't get out of bed. I was a young kid on the out and about and just not paying attention to what he has to do, you know. Like most teenagers, get a bit of freedom. They think you can do whatever they want, you know.
Yeah. What was the wake-up call moment for James Graham?
Well, when I went to my other job, I left horses for about 3 months and started working on a building site and didn't like it. So I went back and I got a phone number from a guy called Pat Martin, and I made a call and I started to work for the guy. And after that, I started getting on good and he did okay and thought I could ride a little bit, and then he gave me my license after about 4 years.
Yeah, what were some of the biggest lessons you learned when you were working with him?
How to sit the one real well.
Yeah?
Yeah, I did a lot of the braking because I was light. We'd have a mixed yard of jump horses and flat horses. So the jump horses would come in, they'd be 4-year-old, big, strong animals. Probably haven't seen a person for maybe 3 years up until they come to your yard. And you went and you got them broke. And it was great. It really was. He taught me how to enjoy my work.
James, could you ever imagine that, you know, those days when you're sleeping in and you're getting fired and you're paying your dues, you're going through the jock school, all those types of things, could you ever imagine that you'd be staring 2,000 wins squarely in the face like you are now?
No, definitely not. It's very rewarding on an everyday basis for the job that I do. Especially for me, considering you had so many people say that you couldn't do it, you'll never be able to get it done because of your attitude and stuff like that. But for me now, I'm older, I'm wiser. Don't know how much smarter, but I'm older and wiser, definitely. But since I've been in America, I just love what I'm doing, and I always have loved what I'm doing. It just took me a little while to cop on to what I needed to do.
When you hear people say that you can't do it and you're not going to make it, does that, like most athletes, does that fuel you and drive you?
Oh, yeah, big time. It's like the switch goes on. They say I can't do this, but I'm going to show them, you know? For me, it's very hard to say the way I want to say it without I don't know. but no, I do. I really, it's like a challenge, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and for me, I'll step up, and I have done. I've had people come and tell me, ah, you can't win this race, so yeah. I've had other riders tell me, oh, you ride for that guy, you can't win that race. And I just turn around and watch me. You know, and I've done it to a lot in my career.
What do you like most about being a jockey, James?
Just getting on horses.
Just the love of the horse.
Yep.
I've had other riders come on this program and tell me that the thrill and the excitement and that feeling that they get when they cross the finish line in front is like a drug. And the more you do it, the more you need it. And it doesn't matter if it's in a grade one race or a $10,000 claiming race. The feeling is the same when you win a horse race.
Yeah.
And it becomes like a drug. Is that right?
Yeah. It's like, especially, like, I work a lot. I get on a lot of horses in the morning. But it's great when you've been working one and you say, man, he's starting to go good. He's figuring it out, especially young horses, you know. Like the development, you can feel the development every time you work them. And you just think to yourself, man, this fella's going to be okay. He could be anything, you know. And then all of a sudden, you ride him first time out. He probably runs third or fourth or fifth maybe, and you turn around and you say, man, he'll be better next time. He's just figuring out the game, and he comes back and he wins a maiden, and you go on from there, you know. But you look forward to the next step, you know, when he does finally cross the finish line, and you say, man, all the hard work that we put into this guy, it's paid off, and you know, he can win again, and he can win again, and maybe he can do this, and maybe he can do that. But for me, it's always been that kind of just, you know, yes, you did such a good job with this horse that you're able to, you know, for me, it's like, yes, we got it done. He didn't look good early on, but he's went from the ugly duckling into the swan, you know?
Give me an example.
But it is like a drug that every time you cross that finish line, you want to keep doing it and doing it more and more and more frequent. But it's racing is racing, you know?
Give me an example of a horse that fits that scenario that you started working with at a very young age, and all of a sudden that light bulb went on and he turned into, as you said, from the ugly duckling to the swan, and he just blossomed. Do you remember a horse that happened with?
It's Stanford.
Really? Tell me that story.
Yeah. Well, it's Stanford, she came in to do it all to Mike Sutton's barn, and we were working her, and she was getting in, she was slowly coming around, and she was doing everything right, just kind of the light hadn't come on, and she was going forward every time she walked. And so we finally ran her in Arlington Park. And ran her in Arlington Park at the back end of the meet, towards the end of August, early September. And she broke really sharp, and she hadn't been breaking really sharp in the morning. She just kind of get out there and just float along and just doing what she was asked to do, like what pretty good, pretty decent one will do anyway. And she broke, she went to the lead, and she never looked back. She was just, you know, she was just a nice filly. She just, everything came together and on race day, and she did her job and she did it well, and that was it. She proved that she was she had taken her steps properly and went forward, and it was great.
Do good horses like that have certain qualities in common that you can pick up on as a jockey, and you know right away when that horse is young, hey, they have that it factor? Are there certain things like that?
Yeah, definitely. Like when horses come in from the farms, everybody says, well, this one's doing this and this one's doing that. But until you get them, one might show a little more speed early on, like that oh yeah, he's aggressive on the bridle early in his works, but he kind of peters out and he flattens out a little bit. So then you get the other ones that aren't as quick. When they finally do start catching up, it's bang, 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 bang. They start getting it, start catching up, and then they start going on about their business. For me, I like a young horse to from week to week to take that next step, you know. When you first work them, they'll be very green. They might not swap leads, right, or you might just not know what to do. But over, say, 3 or 4 weeks, if they're taking them steps, going to the next step, taking you and moving forward from the first time to the next time to the next time, that's what I look forward to in the young horse, you know. And most good ones will show you doing that anyway. It might take them a run or two, but when they figure it out, it's great.
Visiting with jockey James Graham on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. James, just a couple of minutes left before we do have to get to a short commercial break. We'll come back and continue our visit here in the second half of the show. Kind of curious, though, where'd the name Lucky Charm come from? Who gave you that?
I think it was Calvin Burrell, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Did he think you looked like a leprechaun?
Yeah, I think so. It stuck, though. It did stick. The nickname I have, and I printed it on the back of my helmet cover and back of my breeches and stuff. So, it's my nickname.
Calvin Burrell, he's interesting. I mean, here's a guy that has won, what, 3 Kentucky Derbies and always seems to find himself on the rail. He has his nickname, Calvin Burrell, because he likes to be down toward the inside. When you're riding against him, are you always looking for him coming up the rail, or do you kind of have to be, you know, keep in mind that he could be anywhere?
Exactly. Calvin, 90% of the time he's going to save ground. He loves being close to the fence, but that's a brother of his did that to him. And I've learned from him too over the years. You know, you save as much ground as you can, you know, and his brother made him do that. And he was kind of my mentor when I had the bug here in New Orleans the first year, that he said, you need to start doing this. And, you know, he was one that took an interest in me and tried to help me and teach me, because I wasn't very good and I wasn't learning. I was like one of them young horses that didn't know what to do, and I was just getting in the way and stuff like that. So he was a good mentor for me here when I first started riding. So, you know, anything Calvin says, I do. So it's great, you know.
Well, you learned from a good one. Let's hope you can have that same success as Calvin moving forward, not just on the first Saturday in May, but, of course, he is now a Hall of Famer. It'd be wonderful to see James Graham in the Hall of Fame someday as well. James, stay with me. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and continue this visit on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on HRN.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word JOCKEY to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, It's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Xacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word JOCKEY to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms, mgive.org/chi.
Hello, this is Kayla Stratt, and I'm here to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It is the fastest growing legal, safe, and secure website to place all your bets on horse racing. BetAmerica covers over 200 racetracks from North America, the UK, and my home country, Australia. New players to BetAmerica receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
The New York Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund means business for New York. Together with all equine pursuits in the Empire State, we pay more than $187 million in taxes and provide 33,000 jobs. We provide scholarships for young people who want to join the New York horse industry, and we encourage everyone to support all thoroughbreds all their lives. Visit nybreds.com to learn more about why the fund means business.
Jude Feld, the pontiff of the Pick Four. You hear him on HRRN Radio. Now get his personal selections directly from him at his new site, PopeJude.com. Every analysis sheet at PopeJude.com has his personal selections and insights. Each page is a handicapping lesson packed with years of racing knowledge, coupled with insider information gleaned from the pontiff's countless connections in thoroughbred racing. Whether you're looking for another set of eyes on the past performances or inspired racing analysis to assault the windows, PopeJude.com is the site for you.
Celebrating 10 years of Eclipse award-winning coverage.
Joined by Coach Bill Parcells, who led the New York Giants to the Super Bowl in both 1986 and 1990. And yes, he won both of those. What do you remember about the day that you won your first race?
I just remember being excited. It's the same feeling you get when they kick the ball off in football and they put that horse in the gate and your name's on it. It's a little like football, but you have absolutely no control in horse racing. And in football, at least, you have a little bit of control in game management and decisions that are made. But it's just the luck of the draw, but that doesn't reduce the excitement. The excitement's the same, the adrenaline's the same, and when that horse goes in there, you know, you're definitely paying attention.
Thank you for making HRRN your home for a decade of memories.
Hi, this is Chris McCarron, and you're listening to the best horse racing show on the radio on Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
They're moving by the quarter pole. Hot Cha-Cha finds the opening down toward the rail, moves up to take the lead off the far turn. Shared Account second, Gossip Girl third, Miss World is fourth. Moving by the eighth pole, Hot Cha-Cha leads it by 2.5 lengths, by 3 lengths clear in the final furlong. Hot Cha-Cha and James Graham with the upset in the Queen Elizabeth II Challenge Cup. And how about that? It's all Hot Cha-Cha. Shared Account will be second, Gossip Girl third, Miss World was fourth, 1 minute, 53 seconds flat.
Hot Cha-Cha winning the Queen Elizabeth II at Keeneland. A very special moment for jockey James Graham, and he is our guest on this St. Patrick's Day, appropriately so, because as you heard in the first half of the show, he's a native of Dublin, Ireland, known to his fellow jockeys as Lucky Charm. So I thought it would be great to bring you this St. Paddy's Day edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka by visiting with James Graham. Do want to welcome everybody back to the program. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, in our Lexington studios. Jockey Christina McManigal, my usual co-host and entry mate here on the show, will be back with me next weekend as well, or next week, I should say, next Tuesday here on the program. If you missed any portion of this show, you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net. A podcast of this show and all of our Jock Talk shows are available for you right there. You can listen at your leisure, all at horseracingradio.net. Hot Cha-Cha, the very first Grade 1 winner in the career of jockey James Graham. That was in 2009. Keeneland Racecourse, Lexington, Kentucky, the QE2. Kurt Becker had the call. James, looking back on that day, breaking through with your first grade one, especially after the stories you told in the first half of this show, that had to be an amazing moment for you.
Yeah, it really was. She was a lovely filly. She had just come off winning the Poker Up in Arlington Park. She'd been placed in the Arlington Oaks, and I think she'd win the Bourbonnet, I think, as a two-year-old. But she did everything right that day. Everything worked out perfect. Got a lovely trip up the inside, and she skipped clear and finished off her race really well. Nearly fell off her after the word, trying to have her on the neck. And, you know, just those things, you know. She was a lovely filly to ride.
Did you go out and celebrate afterwards?
No, not really. I don't drink, so there's no point going out. And I don't eat that much, so.
Well, wait a minute. Now, you started talking about going to the pub to celebrate St. Patrick's Day in Ireland. And I guess we're back.
Yeah, but you go with your parents. You need, being a child in Dublin, that they go celebrate St. Patrick's Day. You just go with them.
You have no choice.
No.
James Graham here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You ended the first half of the show by talking about Calvin Burrell and how he mentored you when you were first here in the United States. And you said, you know, I wasn't very good at that point, but Calvin taught me a lot. What did Calvin teach you?
Well, he taught me how to be patient, how to get one to relax and sit quiet on one, and just save horse, really. He's very good at that himself. So if you watch him ride, he always looks like he's got a horse. And he's just a complete rider, you know. He can do it from the front and from the back, and he's one to watch big races, because he's always, even when it's a 50-to-1 shot, as he proved with Mind That Bird, that you can't ever ride him off.
I've had people tell me that James Graham is a very difficult rider to get past in the stretch. If you're in a battle with a horse that you're riding, that you're tough to get by. How about for you? Who's the toughest rider to get by in the stretch?
Everybody is.
Everybody.
Everybody. No, they are. They're very, the riders over here, they're brilliant. You know, they like Javier, Johnny, Robbie Alvarado, Shane Sellers when he was riding. You know, they're just a bunch of the guys that you ride with. Like, there's some riders down here at the fairgrounds this meet and being very tough to get by. And it's just, they're learning like me, you know. They always trying to save that little bit extra to finish off the race.
How do you do that?
I don't know. it's just trying to get them in, keep them in a good rhythm and keep them happy and keep them traveling and try not to make too many moves or try and knock them off stride or stuff like that. So
yeah, for people like myself, James, that have never ridden in a race. I've been on a horse twice in my life, as a matter of fact, and it scared the daylights out of me both times. I definitely didn't have the courage of James Graham aboard a horse. Tell me about rating a horse and saving enough. We'll hear that jockeys have a clock in their head so they can time their move. How do you do that? What's the key?
Just trying to get them into the best rhythm they can, where they're not going too quick early and they're not going too slow early, and just trying to get them into a good rhythm. For me, rhythm is more important than anything else. If they're comfortable in the rhythm that you have them in, you're saving a horse, and they're doing things effortless, you know? They just seem to be rolling along, you know, just like rolling a ball down a hill. You hit a bump here and there, it stops the rolling, you know? But if you get them into a rhythm and just get them to where they're happy without you having to force them or overfight with them, that's mainly the biggest thing. Is the less friction between the two is, the better.
Can you discourage a horse by fighting them too much in a race?
Yeah, by wanting to go too quick or trying to put him in a position he's not comfortable being in or stuff like that, you know?
Sometimes that's out of your control, though, isn't it? Depending on the break?
Yeah, you have to learn to try and get them into a good position or just try and get them to relax as much as possible.
John Velasquez has told me several times that when he goes into the starting gate, that he has a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C. I'd imagine it's very much the same thing for you.
Yeah, definitely. And like sometimes you have to squash plan A and plan B and go to plan C, and then halfway through the race, plan B comes back into play, you know?
Really? It could go that quickly?
Yeah. Like if you know your competition, you're looking at say two certain riders that have certain traits that maybe one likes to move at this certain point of the race in every race, which happens a lot. But then you turn around and say, well, if I get in this spot, he's gonna do this and this, and then that's gonna open up this for me. And you know, it's just knowing your competition, knowing your riders, knowing the horses that you're running against.
That's really interesting, because we'll hear that a lot with basketball, where we'll hear, okay, this player goes to his left really well, but he can't go to his right nearly as well as he goes to his left. We'll hear it with baseball. Okay, this guy's a great fastball hitter, but he can't hit the curveball very well. So jockeys are kind of the same way, and you'll spend time knowing those fellow riders and knowing their strengths and their weaknesses too?
Yeah.
Wow. What's James Graham's biggest strength?
I don't know. My heart, I guess.
Yeah? I mean, I
don't know.
I'm just curious if your riders, your fellow riders are going into a race with you and they're handicapping you and they're saying, okay, James Graham is really good at this. I wonder what it would be.
I don't know.
Nobody's going to beat you if you get into a stretch battle.
Well, I'm going to try. They're going to have to work to get by me. I know that.
What qualities? We talked about common qualities in good horses and that you can tell right away that this horse has that it factor. How about with jockeys, James? What qualities are common in all good jockeys?
Patience, versatility, strength, good eye for what's going to happen in front of them, or being able to read the situation before it happens, or just general riding. You see guys that are able to ride from inside, outside, on the lead, out the back door, it doesn't matter. The riders that you ride with, and we're only human, we do make mistakes, but it's the good riders make the least amount of mistakes.
Yeah, well said. James Graham here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. James, let's go back to your first win in the United States. It came July 1st, 2003, and people might not realize this. It came at River Downs. Tell me about that day.
I remember that day. I had to ask the trainer for $25 so I could get my license.
You're kidding.
Yeah, I swear to God. I remember the trainer, Al Shepa. I remember the horse, DJ Star, and the 6-4-long, I think it was 5 or 7,500 claimer. But I remember the little horse. He was a cool little horse.
Yeah. Is there a sense when you win that race that, hey, I can do this? I'm good enough to compete with these riders here in the States?
No.
Really?
I was very naive at the time. but I was willing to learn and willing to try and willing to, give it everything I had.
Yeah, that brings up another good point. I mentioned you're closing in on 2,000 wins, and I'm sure you're sick of hearing that by now because you don't want it to get into your head, but it doesn't sound like it's going to bother James Graham at all. But when you're hot, it's easy. You're seeing everything. You're seeing the ball very well, so to speak. But when a jockey gets into a slump and you're not winning races and you feel like you should be, how difficult is it, or how do you maintain that confidence through a streak like that?
You just have it. That's in your head. That's stuff I try not to think about. Let's go over here and let's try not to make things happen and let it happen itself. And a lot of riders are inclined to try and make things happen. I'm guilty of it myself. Trying to force something to do something that it's not physically able to do, or overthinking stuff, which is not good. And that's, like as you said, and you're closing in on 2,000 wins, overthinking that stuff is not good, you know?
Yeah, you just show up and you do your job.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it didn't take you long after your first win in 2003 to pick up your first graded stakes win, and that was at Arlington, the Grade 3 Breeders' Cup Oaks, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah.
Tell me about that one.
Lovely afternoon.
Yeah.
I picked her up at the entry because I was one of the only ones that could do the weight that didn't have a mount.
Wow. Well, and it turned out to be pretty good.
Yeah, she was a lovely filly too. Lovely afternoon.
That was a big breakthrough. And then, you know, of course, that came shortly after your first stakes win that was at Canterbury Park, right?
Yeah, on a filly called Barbadum.
Wow. You certainly have paid your dues. You think about coming up through the ranks at River Downs, riding at Canterbury. I know you probably just went in to ride at Canterbury, if I'm not mistaken, right? And then, of course, you know, spending a lot of time at Arlington Park, and now you're at the fairgrounds and Keeneland. Boy, you think about where your career started and where it is today. It's quite remarkable, James.
Yeah, that's all having good people around you, you know, where you're able to make a little bit of a mistake and keep going forward, you know. Like we see it day in, day out.
Outside of Calvin, when you came to the United States, who else really helped you out in those early days?
Frankie Lovato. Who else? Well, I had to be trainers and stuff. But a lot of people, like as a bug, they want to see if you're going to listen to them. And as an apprentice, they want to know if you're, like everybody helps. You take bits and pieces from riders that you think ride well and try and manipulate them into your own style. But Calvin was the one that took all the time to sort of, this is what you're doing wrong. This is what you need to do. This is what you have to try and fix and stuff like that, you know. But we had a lot of them, like a lot of, even the senior riders at the time, they were, oh, he's just another bull. He's not real smart, you know. But that's the way things go.
Well, and now you're
90% of it was Calvin.
Yeah, you're one of the veteran riders in the jocks room now. So do you kind of feel an obligation to the younger guys to work with them and help bring them along just like Calvin did with you?
Oh, yeah, try and help them as much as you can. And we have a bug boy down here that he gets his rear end chewed about once a day by me and somebody else. And I'm only trying to help him to say, look, you need to stop doing this. You need to start looking a little more. Stop running into that bad spot when you've got no horse, you know? Or when you've got too much horse. And I still do that stuff myself, but sometimes you can't overcome the people around you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I can imagine that it's a very important thing to you because you've been there. You've had somebody that took you under their wing and helped you along. So I can imagine it has to be one of those things where you just feel like this is your duty and it's what you want to do. Because if I'm not mistaken, if you're teaching that bug boy to be a better rider, it's helping everybody across the board because it makes it safer in the race because you know that there aren't going to be those silly mistakes, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And then that puts his life less in danger and your life less in danger, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Is that ever anything that goes through? We all know the dangers of the sport and the profession, James. Does that ever enter into a jockey's mind?
If that does, that's time you need to get out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe it or not, I've not, thank God, I haven't never had to think about getting hurt during the race, and I have. I've got hurt during plenty of races, but we don't, I definitely don't think, well, that wasn't good, and I was kind of scared there. That never, ever enters my head. Can't.
Yeah. You've told me about so many of the big name horses you've been around. Stanford, Hot Cha Cha. We talked about her a few moments ago and how special she was. You had a chance to ride Ron the Greek, won a grade three on Ron the Greek as well.
Yeah.
Tell me about some of the other horses that you've been around that are always going to stick out to you.
Daisy Devine, my girlfriend.
She was good, your girlfriend.
I used to ride a horse for Lenny Pike called Taja Weed.
Yeah.
I rode Corellian. I won a grade three in Corellian, who won the Breeders' Cup Mile.
Yep.
I think he won the Breeders' or the Maker's Mark Mile anyway. I've rode...
Upper Line was a good one too, right? I remember Upper
Line. Yeah, I won a bunch of races on Upper Line.
Yeah.
On a filly called Stellaris. Haven't won a grade stake on her yet, but she's a big one placed last year as a three-year-old, so but she's coming back. There's a bunch of them. And you, Delaney.
Wilcox Inn. So, I remember Wilcox Inn, right? Wilcox, didn't you ride Wilcox Inn?
Yeah. I've been lucky enough to ride some really nice horses. Padger Weed, Orsus, you know, just a bunch of them. And there's a lot of horses that I've ridden and done really well on. And I'm just happy to have the opportunity.
How'd you get the mount on your, on Daisy Devine?
Calvin rode her in the maiden at Keeneland and said, oh, you could run her for 30. She could probably win on the dirt. So once we rode her, once I rode her here, she broke her maiden. She went by a head, going 6 furlongs. Didn't like being on the inside. So Brian Hernandez rode her back after that in the middle of the dam because she had run for the 30 and I couldn't get out of the mount that I was on. She went at Everdam, and then I came back in second on her in, I think it was the Tiffany Lass.
Okay.
And we skipped the next prep, and I came back and went on her at the in the Fairgrounds Oaks.
I remember watching her win the Jenny Wiley.
Yeah, she was very impressive that day.
Yeah, she was awesome. What made her so special? You referred to her as your girlfriend.
Yeah, she was a little different. She had how would you say, an explosive temperament.
So she could be a bit temperamental?
Very.
How did you overcome that with her?
I just let her get in the rhythm. Tried to be nice to her all the time and just keeping out of her way and being a very good passenger on her. You know, she was very, very cool to ride once you got her into a rhythm. I don't think I've ever missed a board on her.
That's a special filly when you have a horse that's that honest and always responds. And I would assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, James, but jockeys must have special relationships with certain horses, right? Where they just, for whatever reason, respond to you, and they wouldn't necessarily respond that way to any other rider. Is that true?
That has to be true, because if you see a horse run good with one rider, and then you come back and you ride him and you say, this horse don't run for me, you know? You come back even bad with you or with somebody else. Why didn't he leave that guy young? Or stuff like that. And that's, you know, for us, it's very welcoming that people come back and tell you, well, you get along with this filly so well, yada, yada, yada. Or this horse, he runs the best races for you and stuff like that. But it is very rewarding to be able to strike up a relationship with a horse, I find. And especially if they keep going forward for you, you know.
James Graham, our special guest on this St. Patrick's Day edition of Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. James, only 4 or 5 minutes left before we have to wrap this one up. It's really flown by. It's been great to hear your story. But I always like to end these interviews by asking riders to tell us something that people might not know about them. So when James Graham is not at the racetrack, I know you have a few children, you have your wife. What other things do you like doing?
I like to go fishing, but only here in New Orleans.
Really?
Yeah.
How come? Why just New Orleans?
It's just because it's out and it's warm and you're out in the marsh and there's a good chance you'll catch fish.
So no ice fishing in Michigan for you?
No.
How about your kids? Are they involved in the sport in any way?
They ride a pony.
Would you want them to be a jockey?
If they wanted to be, but for some reason I don't think they want to go down that way. But my eldest has said she wants to be a vet or a police officer.
Okay.
My middle, he said he wanted to be a vet, but he wanted to work with dinosaurs, so I don't know. And the baby's too young, so she can't talk.
What would your reaction be if they came to you and said, hey, I want to be a jockey?
I would not discourage it, but would tell them all the worst things that can happen.
Yeah, probably a good move to get that out there right off the bat and then let them make their own decisions.
Exactly. Weigh the pros and cons and try to see. Like, for me, I've been very lucky that I don't have to reduce real hard to keep my weight down.
Mm-hmm.
But the way my son has grown, I don't think he's going to be small enough to ride anyway, so that's a good thing. But my daughter, she's itty-bitty, and she might want to do it, and I'll tell her what to expect and what can happen and what might happen, and just see what she says from there.
What does the future hold for James Graham? What's still left to accomplish?
Keep my family happy and healthy.
Yeah, even outside of the racetrack, James Graham's a very focused individual, and you can tell from listening to this entire Jock Talk show that he's paid his dues and he's made some mistakes along the way, but now he's on the threshold of 2,000 career wins, and I promise that's the last time I'm going to say that, James. Get that out of your head now, okay? Go forget about it. Enjoy St. Patrick's Day, and really want to thank you for joining me here on the program. It's been so much fun to hear your story.
Thanks, Mike. Pleasure being on.
All right, James Graham here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, and of course, a portion of the sponsorship of this show benefiting the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. You heard James talk about being injured a couple of times. It's a reality when you're a jockey. You can't avoid it. It's going to happen, and hopefully it doesn't happen too seriously. But for those that it does, you can support the PDJF, pdjf.org. Great story. Really great story. Taking him back to Ireland, talking about not being good in school, and then joining the jock school. And even then, after he graduated jock school, he still had some issues. Didn't want to get out of bed. I can relate to that. Good to hear his story, and good to see James Graham doing as well as he's doing here in the States, and one of the more underrated riders, in my opinion, no doubt about it. My thanks to James Graham for being here on Jock Talk. Don't forget to support Tito's Handmade Vodka. They support us and support the industry. You make sure you do the same. Catch us every Tuesday. We're back next Tuesday with a brand new edition. For my producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Mike Pennell. We'll talk to you next time on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.